You got the wrong two men. Me and Sam there just happened to come along and find this old claim just this morning. You didn't have no call to put a bullet in his shoulder.
Is that a fact? Burley asked. You don't know what happened to the two fellows who were working this claim?
How about those horses? You find them here, too?
No, the man replied. We brung them with us. We're in the horse trading business. We was on our way to Deadwood Gulch to sell some of these horses.
Can't help but notice they're toting four saddles, and you ain't got but two fannies to set in them, Pearly said. That paint there belongs to my grandpa, and I can't let you get away with that. You shot him and left him for dead.
The outlaw was beginning to realize that Pearly wasn't cold-blooded enough to execute him and his partner. If he was, he wouldn't have placed his shot in Sam's shoulder.
"Listen, mister, there's been a big mistake here. Just hear me out. I ain't no outlaw. My name's Jed Riley, and my partner is Sam Ingram. The fact of the matter is, we bought these horses from two fellers yesterday. We didn't know they were stolen. I don't blame you for being mad, and we'd be willing to stand before a judge if there's one in that town upstream."
All the while he talked, Riley shuffled casually to the side until he had forced Pearly to turn slightly to keep an eye on him. Aware that his partner was trying to create an angle too great to allow Pearly to watch both of them, Sam moved slowly toward the six-gun he had dropped. Riley, seeing that Sam was thinking like him, kept talking, trying to hold Pearly's attention.
"What would it take to make you see we ain't out to hurt nobody?"
"For one thing," Pearly replied, "maybe your partner can stop right where he is, 'cause if he doesn't, I'm going to have to put the next shot where it'll hurt."
"You know what I'm thinking now?" Riley asked, figuring the odds against him. "I'm thinking you ain't fast enough to cover both of us. If you fire that rifle at Sam, I'll guarantee you I'll put a bullet in you before you crank another cartridge into the chamber and turn back around to shoot at me. If you shoot at me instead of Sam, he's going to put a bullet in your back. Ain't that right, Sam?"
"That's right, Jed," Sam replied. "I ain't hurt that bad. I can reach my gun before he can eject that shell."
"That makes it kind of different, don't it, friend?" Riley chided, noticing his partner still inching toward the .44 on the ground. "You still think you're fast enough to get both of us?"
"I do," Pearly answered honestly.
"Well, mister, you're a special kind of stupid," Riley jeered, and suddenly went for the .44 on his hip. Pearly squeezed the trigger, dropped the rifle, and drew his Colt before Sam could pick up his pistol and cock it. Caught with his pistol not cocked, staring at the Colt aimed at him, and Pearly patiently awaiting his next move, Sam Ingram looked death in the eye. Riley was bent double, lying on his side. After a moment, Ingram tossed his gun on the ground.
"I reckon you've killed both of us," he said.
Pearly gazed at the thief and murderer, suddenly rendered pitiful. He felt disgust for the episode just finished.
"I reckon you both deserve to die, but you ain't worth carrying on my conscience. You've got a bullet in your shoulder, and your partner's gut shot. I don't know if he'll make it. You can make out the best way you can. If I see you again, I'll finish the job."
He pressed his fingers to his lips and whistled. In a few seconds, the big bay emerged from the trees and loped toward him. "Sit down over on the other side of the fire," he ordered, and Sam did as he was told, leaving his partner to lie where he fell. Pearly picked up the dropped weapons and took them to the horses tied to the rope. While watching the two wounded men closely, he untied the rope between the trees and used it as a lead rope. He climbed into the saddle and started to lead the horses out of the camp, pausing only a moment to respond to Sam's desperate plea.
"You're just going to leave us here without no horses or weapons to hunt with?" Sam cried.
"I reckon I could shoot you and put you out of your misery, but that would be too easy on you," If there was a lawman hereabouts, I'd turn you over to him. But there ain't one, so I'm going to leave your horses up the creek a ways. But I'm taking that paint and two others. You can manage any way you can.
We're both wounded, Sam protested. You might as well shoot us dead.
I reckon it'll be up to you to see how bad you want to live. He nudged Buck and rode out of the camp. When he was about half a mile up the creek, Purdy took the paint and the best two of the other three saddled horses, then left the remaining horses to graze on the creek bank. He was not sure whether what he was doing was right or not, but he didn't have it in him to execute the two outlaws. It would be difficult for them, but he felt he was giving them a chance to make it to their horses and possibly survive. Why? He couldn't explain. He just didn't like the idea of shooting the pair when he had them helpless before him. Sam Ingram watched helplessly until Purdy disappeared into the trees. Then he went over to check on his partner, still lying doubled up on his side.
"You gonna make it, partner?" Sam asked. "I don't know,"
Jed gasped painfully.
"I'm shot pretty bad. You're gonna have to help me."
He coughed up a little blood when he tried to say more.
"I will, partner," Sam said. "I'll take care of you."
He drew his skinning knife, grabbed Jed by his hair, and yanked his head back. One hard swipe with the knife laid Jed's throat open. When he was done, Sam stood over him and said,
"If it was me instead of you, you'd have done the same thing."
He said he was going to leave our horses up this creek. I don't know if he will or not.
I can walk out of here, but not if I have to carry you. We wouldn't make it if I had to come back and try to take care of you. I gotta take care of myself. That's just the hand we was dealt."
Chapter 17 It would be a couple of days before his grandpa was able to ride, and that was probably still too soon, in Purley's opinion. But the old man insisted he could stay on his horse, especially since Purley had recovered his paint Indian pony.
"That horse fits me like a rocking chair," his grandfather claimed. "He'll rock me to sleep. You don't have to worry about me."
Lena was now riding a saddled horse also, one that had belonged to Lem Wooten, as verified by Purley's grandfather.
"That's Lem's horse and saddle, all right," Grandpa said.
When Purley had taken it, he had no way of knowing if the horse was Lem's or one of the outlaws. He just took the best-looking horses. He also had two more, his own pack horse, plus one that he brought back to replace his Grandpa's pack horse. He offered to let Mamie ride one of them, but she preferred to ride her mule.
"Me and horses ain't ever got along too good," she claimed. "Me and that mule understand each other, so I'll ride easier on him."
Purley had taken advantage of the time spent waiting for his grandpa to recover by using it to hunt, and he found that Grandpa had been right when he said the deer were coming back to the creek. So there would be plenty of smoked venison loaded on the pack horses when they started out for Deadwood. On the day before they left, Purley returned to the mining claim where he had shot the two outlaws. He found Jed Riley's body still there, but the horses and his partner were gone. Purley lingered over the body for a moment, wondering if Riley would have made it had his throat not been cut. There was no way to know if his partner would be in search of Purley or not, but Purley's gut feeling was that he would not. The next morning, Purley led his little party out to strike the stage road to Deadwood. Behind him, one recovering old man, an optimistic widow, and a confident young girl. There had been a bit of reluctance on Mamie's part when it came to abandoning her stove and her tables and chairs, but they had no means to transport them. She consoled herself with the knowledge that she would have everything she needed at her son-in-law's hotel. Purley's major desire at this point was to take his grandfather home to Texas, but a secondary obligation was to escort Lena and Mamie to Deadwood. He felt it was typical of so many of his endeavors, riding north when he should be heading south. It was late in the afternoon when they descended a steep hill on a winding road that led them down into Deadwood Gulch, a narrow gulch about 10 miles long. Pearlie's first reaction to the settlement that had sprung up in the gulch was to compare it to an insane asylum. The narrow street was filled with people and animals, including horses, mules, and oxen. There were tents and shacks built along the banks of Deadwood Creek, as well as places of business. In fact, it seemed that every other building was a saloon or gambling house. Deadwood itself was farther ahead, and was not the only town accompanying the gulch, so they rode along the winding creek road through a couple of other towns until reaching Deadwood, where Mamie took command of their party and led them to the Gaines Hotel, between two saloons.
"This is it," she proclaimed. "This is my son-in-law's place."
Eager to surprise him, she pulled her mule up to a stop and slid off its back.
"Come on, folks, and I'll introduce you to my daughter and her husband."
She and Lena hurried inside the hotel, but grandfather and grandson both took a wary look around them, wondering if their possessions were safe on a street teeming with every kind of villain imaginable. Burley was already wondering about where they would stay the night. From what he could see, there was no place near the creek where he could camp. "We might have to ride back out of this gulch and find some place to make camp back up in the hills."
"That'd suit me just fine," his grandpa replied. "This place is so crowded, I bet they have to come out and stir it with a stick once in a while, so folks can go about their business."
"Well, let's go inside and make sure Mamie and Lena are gonna be all right." Pearlie wasn't really concerned about Mamie as much as he was for Lena. All she had requested of him in the beginning was that he take her to Deadwood, but he couldn't help feeling some responsibility for her beyond that. He need not have worried, however, for when he and his grandpa went inside, they found Mamie and Lena talking excitedly in a happy reunion between Mamie and her daughter Julia.
"Come meet my daughter," Mamie invited when the two men walked into the tiny lobby. "Julia, this is Pearlie Gates and Pearlie Gates," she announced with a chuckle. "They were kind enough to see us safely here. Boys, this is Julia. She says that she and Ron, that's her husband, have been waiting for me to get him a dining room up and running. I told her I'm raring to get started." She turned to give Lena a wide smile. "Told her I've brought my help with me."
This immediately caught Pearlie's attention, and he turned to see Lena smiling at him. She nodded, and he knew she was happy with the arrangement, so there was nothing else for him to worry about. "Well, I'm right pleased to meet you, ma'am," he said to Julia. "This looks like a nice little hotel you've got here. I reckon my grandpa and I will be heading back to Texas first thing in the morning. We'd best go see about finding some place to keep our horses overnight. Maybe you can direct us to a good stable."
"There are 2 good stables in town," Julia said. "But you can keep your horses in our barn where my husband keeps his. We have a few stalls for our guests, and there's no one using any of them right now. My husband should be back any time now, and I know he'll insist on helping you with your horses. And I've got a room for you and your grandfather, so you won't have to go somewhere else looking for one."
"Much obliged," Pearlie said. He looked at his grandpa and grinned. "That would be mighty nice of you." Like his grandpa, he had expected to sleep in the stall with his horse. "We wouldn't want to trouble your husband none. We'll just take the horses to your barn." Things couldn't have worked out much better. Mamie's daughter seemed genuinely pleased to see her mother, and Lena appeared to be happy with her new role. Pearlie and his grandfather could go home now, with nothing in their way but a long ride to Texas. Pearlie was eager to get started. Morning couldn't come quickly enough. The hotel stable was a small affair, half of it built into the side of the steep hill behind the hotel. The barn was almost filled with hay bales, since there was no piece of ground with grass for the horses to graze. Pearlie was in the process of forking some hay into the stalls when a slight man with a neat mustache and short dark hair came into the barn.
"Glad to meet you, gentlemen. I'm Ron Gaines. Julia said you're getting settled all right. I want to thank you for seeing my mother-in-law safely here."
"Weren't no trouble at all," Grandpa spoke up. "She didn't put up no fuss to amount to anything."
Ron laughed.
"I'm glad to hear it, but she can be a handful if she sets her mind to it."
Pearlie shook Ron's hand when it was extended to him. Upon meeting Julia, he had been impressed that a young couple could start a business as demanding as the hotel. He could see now that Ron was quite a bit older than his wife, already showing a bit of gray in his sideburns.
"We're obliged for your hospitality," he said to Ron. "It won't hurt us to bed down out here with our horses, if you can sell our room tonight."
"I wouldn't hear of it," Ron insisted. "You'll be my guests."
He smiled at them both.
"We'll see if the women can rustle up something fit to eat. See if there's any hope they can open a dining room for our guests."
Mamie wasted little time in taking over her daughter's kitchen, with absolutely no resistance from Julia, who was never the cook her mother was. However, she joyfully assisted in the preparation of their supper with Lena's help. It was a meal enjoyed by all partakers, especially Ron, for he was already beaming when he thought of the dining room business he was bound to steal from the other hotels. After supper, Lena helped Grandpa clean up his wounds and apply clean bandages. There was still some bleeding around the wound in his back, enough so that Lena asked Pearlie to wait another day before starting out for Texas.
"It's not going to hurt you to wait one more day, to make sure that wound ain't going to start bleeding like hell. I ain't so sure he's feeling as well as he claims he is. A ride like that might be pretty hard on that old man, and with nobody to take care of him but you."
Pearlie conceded, but complained about the insult. He figured there were some supplies they were short on, so he might as well replace them tomorrow. With that settled, they retired to their rooms for the night. Morning brought another occasion for a big breakfast, as Mamie was intent upon showing her son-in-law what a good investment she was.
"I could get used to this pretty quick," Grandpa commented. "I might decide to stay here, instead of riding all the way back to Texas."
"You sure ain't gonna get any breakfast like this on the ride back, if I'm doing the cooking," Pearlie said. "So don't go getting used to it."
"Dr. Lena said that wound ain't bleeding as bad this morning, and if it doesn't get any worse today, they're going to kick us out of the hotel tomorrow."
"Speaking of Dr. Lena," Mamie said as she sat down with them to have a cup of coffee,
"I'm going to have to take that girl shopping for some clothes. She can't spend the rest of her life in that one dress."
"I reckon not," Pearlie agreed. "But it looks a lot better than the one I found her in."
"There's a new store open next to the Bella Union Saloon," Julia said. "You should go there. I've heard they plan to carry men's and women's clothes, so you might get a better price since they're probably trying to get their business started."
"It doesn't matter how good their prices are," Lena interrupted. "I ain't got no money."
"Don't you worry, honey. Mamie's gonna take care of you," Mamie cooed playfully.
Pearlie smiled, enjoying the warm, friendly atmosphere. It appeared he had wasted any moments he had spent worrying about Lena's welfare. After breakfast, Pearlie and his grandfather decided to do a little sightseeing on the crowded street outside the hotel. Grandpa insisted he could walk in spite of his wounds, declaring that a little physical activity would speed up the healing. Pearlie had a strong notion that his grandfather's real incentive was to finally feel the throbbing pulse of the teeming streets of Deadwood, the place he had ridden so hard to see. It would have been a shame for his grandfather to come so close to seeing Deadwood, only to turn back before getting a good look at it. Pearlie had to admit that he found the beehive of miners, merchants, drifters, whores, even outlaws, fascinating as well. But he would be glad to leave it in the morning. After he had checked on prices for some of the supplies he needed, he decided to wait until after they left Deadwood to buy what he needed. He and Grandpa resigned themselves to simply sightseeing.
Lena!
Belle Tatum blurted out without thinking when she spotted the young girl coming out of J.J. Wallingford's.
Where?
Lucy Drover responded, as Belle grabbed her arm and pointed to the door of the General Mercantile store across the street.
Well, I'll be damned, she drew out,
then immediately whispered,
Don't let Mott see her.
It was too late.
Well, as I live and breathe, ain't that a sight for sore eyes? Looks like our little family is back together again, don't it? Come on, he said,
and immediately started across the crowded street, pushing anyone aside who happened in his way.
She's got somebody with her,
Belle said, distressed over having blurted out Lena's name.
Maybe we'd best not bother her.
Maybe you'd best not tell me what to do,
Mott came back at her.
Ain't nobody with her but that old lady, and I aim to claim my property.
He continued to plow through the people crowding the street. Mamie looked up to see the huge man bullying his way toward them, and stepped to the side of the boardwalk.
Move over, or you might get run over, she said to Lena.
Lena looked behind her and froze in shock for a moment before she could utter the one name she detested.
Mott!
Seeing the leering face of the monster she hoped she had escaped, her only thought then was to take flight. So she ran past Mamie, her eyes wide with fright. Mamie immediately recognized the name Lena had muttered and acted at once to intercept the raging beast. She stepped in front of Mott and grabbed his shirt in an effort to stop him. Although a large and husky woman, she proved no match for a person of Mason's size and strength. One blow with his fist sent her sprawling to land on her back, and barely slowed him down in his craze to recapture his property. Lena, slim and quick, could outrun the clumsy man chasing her, but her luck ran against her when she collided head-on with a miner coming out of a saloon. Mott was on her before she could scramble back up onto her feet. With one huge hand around her throat, he lifted her up to stand her on her feet.
"Hello, darling," he slurred triumphantly. "Did you really think I wasn't going to find you? You put me to a hell of a lot of trouble, and I am to take it out of your hide."
"Let me go, you son of a bitch!"
Lena cried, and began flailing away at his chest with her fists. It seemed to bring him a great deal of satisfaction, and served only to tighten his hand around her throat until she could no longer breathe. When she could fight no longer, she began to fade away, giving in to the threat of death. She lost consciousness before she could hear the command,
"Let her go."
The spectators who had crowded around to watch the altercation between the man and the girl hurriedly cleared a wide path to avoid getting in the way of any gunfire that might erupt. Standing at the other end of that path, Mott saw the man who had challenged him. He immediately released Lena to free his gun hand, and she crumpled to the ground. Without taking his eye off Pearlie, Mott ordered the two women who came up behind him to drag Lena away and make sure she didn't run again.
"Who the hell are you?"
he then demanded of Pearlie.
"I'm the man who's going to stop you from harming that girl," Pearlie said. "You've tormented her for the last time, and I'm giving you a choice. Clear out of here and leave her be, or I'll shoot you down."
He meant what he said. He had never threatened to intentionally take another man's life before. It was against his nature, and he knew he would take no satisfaction in it. But there was no other choice. If he didn't stop Mott Mason now, Lena would never be able to live without torment and fear, forever on the run. There was a brief standoff while the two men stood taking the measure of each other. Mason sized up the young man, challenging him, and concluded that he was not a serious threat. He didn't wear his handgun low in a fast-draw holster, and he lacked the look of a killer. So Mott decided Pearlie was most likely emboldened to vie for the girl's life because he was sweet on her. Convinced that that was likely the case, Mott decided to work on the young man's nerves.
"You the son of a bitch that stole her out of my camp?"
Pearlie didn't answer, so Mott continued, thinking the longer he talked, the more nervous the young man would become.
"She didn't tell you that I bought her from her old man, did she?"
Pearlie made no reply.
"And now she's got you so worked up that you're fixing to pull on a man that will outshoot you 6 days a week and twice on Sunday."
Mott shook his head as if amused by the standoff.
"I don't think I'll even waste a bullet on a tenderfoot like you."
The outlaw shrugged and shifted, as if about to turn and walk away, but suddenly reached for his pistol instead, thinking to catch Pearlie off guard. A fraction of a second later, he doubled up in pain, struck in the chest by the .44 slug from Pearlie's Colt, Mott's gun having never cleared his holster. The look of pure shock on his face was reflected in the faces watching the duel.
"Damn,"
Lena exhaled, having recovered enough to have witnessed the shooting.
"I never thought he could do anything like that."
She looked at Belle Tatum kneeling beside her, who was equally amazed. They were joined in moments by Mamie Dance, who was sporting a swollen lump beside her left eye.
"Are you all right?" Mamie asked,
relieved to see that Lena was conscious. When Lena said that she was, Mamie asked,
"Did you know he could handle a gun like that?"
Lena answered by slowly shaking her head. Equally impressed, for he had not read that quality in his mild-mannered grandson, Grandpa walked over to stare at the body of Mott Mason.
"I swear, he's dead. Shot through the heart," he announced.
Then looked around him at the spectators crowding in to get a look.
"I reckon everybody saw it. He drew his weapon first. It was self-defense."
"You're right, old man," one of the spectators said. "He drew first, but I never saw the young fella draw at all." The sound of gunshots had brought the acting sheriff and a deputy to investigate. There were plenty of witnesses willing to testify that the shooting was in self-defense, and the sheriff was happy to accept their word, but he suggested to Pearlie that he should move on to some other town. Pearlie assured him that he was leaving the next morning. Lena, of course, was free of ever again having to worry about the threat of Mott Mason. She was somewhat concerned about the situation Belle and Lucy now found themselves in. Mott had been their only means of support, and now that he was dead, what would they do? She was to find that their attitude was not one of despair at all. In fact, they felt a considerable measure of freedom now that he was not there to command their every move.
"We ain't worried," Belle told her. "We've got us a horse and wagon and everything in it. Me and Lucy'll make out all right."
There was a celebration of sorts that evening at the Gaines Hotel to salute Lena's freedom, and a farewell supper for Pearlie and his grandfather. Mamie once again prepared a meal to remember on their way back to Texas, serving up deer meat, bacon, and coffee. In a way, it would be a rather sad farewell, for in the short time they had all been together, they had begun to feel like family. After supper, Pearlie and Grandpa retired to their room, wishing everyone good night. The next morning, Mamie and Lena came down early to prepare a fitting breakfast for the travelers, only to find them already gone. Lena, especially, was sorely disappointed to find that Pearlie had not waited to say goodbye.
"That man saved my life," she cried. "I had so much to thank him for. I wanted him to know that."
"He knows, honey," Mamie said. That's the reason he left before we got up, 'cause he hated to say goodbye. She had no idea if that was true or not, but Pearlie struck her that way, and it seemed to make Lena feel better. Chapter 18
You know, boy, I weren't sure you had much gravel in your craw when you first found me up yonder in Mamie's shack,
Grandpa confessed as they sat by a campfire halfway between Deadwood and Hill City.
I reckon what they say about judging a book by its cover is true.
He was seeing more and more of himself in his grandson, and he was genuinely looking forward to the long trip back to Texas. They would first return to French Creek to recover the treasure buried there. Then they would head home with enough gold to help salve Grandpa's conscience for leaving his son so many years ago. When they struck French Creek, they ran up on a dozen deer drinking at the water's edge, and when Pearlie yelled, "Let's go hunting!" Grandpa saw it was the very thing he was thinking. The deer bolted, but not before Pearlie brought one down with his Winchester. And when the rest of the herd scattered, Grandpa bagged a doe that veered across in front of them.
"Good shot," Pearlie called out. "You didn't think I just came to watch, did you?"
Grandpa called back, grinning from ear to ear. He decided that he liked his grandson very much, and he liked to imagine that Pearlie's father had been much the same kind of man. Pearlie won more of his approval when he suggested they should camp there a day or so longer, whatever time it took to smoke the meat and dry the hide some. Pearlie said it wouldn't be right to shoot the deer if you weren't going to use the meat for food, which Grandpa also approved of. They ended up camping there for 2 days before continuing on down the creek toward the claim and getting back to the business of retrieving the gold.
"Buck must remember this place," Pearlie commented when the big bay whinnied as they approached the site of the fight with the two claim jumpers.
He reined his horse back to take a look around before riding down from the ridge to the creek below. Buck might have been trying to tell him something else. Anxious to recover the gold, Grandpa pushed by him and rode on down to the edge of the creek and dismounted. Pearlie had no choice but to follow. While Pearlie stepped down from the saddle, Grandpa walked over to stand beside a large rock that protruded out over the water. He patted the boulder and said,
"Those two skunks snooped around here, waiting to see which one of these rocks me and Lem was going to start digging under."
"Is that a fact?"
The voice came from behind them, startling them both.
"That's right, Mr. Quick Draw. Go for that damn gun. I owe you for this hole you put in my shoulder. Now turn around real slow. You too, old man. I've done killed you once, and it would pleasure me to do it again."
They had no choice but to do as he instructed, so they turned around to confront Sam Ingram, his shoulder crudely bandaged, brandishing a double-barreled shotgun.
"Do like I tell you, and I won't shoot you. I've got a little work for you two. You're going to dig that gold out from under that rock."
He paused to add a devious chuckle.
"I'd help you, if it weren't for this bad shoulder. And if you're thinking about testing me, this shotgun's got a hair trigger. By the way, I appreciate you leaving the horses and guns for me, Quick Draw. Now, with your left hand, both of you, unbuckle those belts and let those guns drop on the ground."
Pearlie's brain was swirling as he considered his options, only to conclude that there were none. His only hope was to get an opportunity to catch Ingram off guard while he and Grandpa were digging under the rock. He and the old man were alive only because of Ingram's bad shoulder, and as soon as the gold was unearthed, they would be executed.
"I should have paid attention when Buck tried to warn me that somebody was hiding down here," Pearlie thought as he began to unbuckle his belt, unprepared for what happened next. Sick inside for having blundered into an ambush,
Grandpa cursed himself for losing the fortune he had intended to pass on to his family. His grandson had paused on the ridge to look things over. He should have waited, too. He decided to take the only option left to him. Having witnessed Pearlie's confrontation with Mott Mason on the street in Deadwood, he was confident of the outcome of his intention. With that in mind, he suddenly reached for the .44 he wore on his side. The blast of the shotgun covered the sound of Pearlie's instant reaction. The old man was knocked several feet backward, landing on his back, while Ingram doubled over and fell on his side.
"Grandpa!"
Pearlie cried out in anguish, and put another round into Ingram, this one in his head. Then he hurried to kneel by his grandfather. The close-range shotgun blast had torn a terrible circle in the old man's torso. He lay still, the only sign of life a fluttering of his eyelids as a pool of blood began to spread under him.
"Grandpa," Pearlie said, "you gotta hang on till I can help you."
Even as he said it, he knew there was nothing he could do to save his grandfather. It made Pearlie sick to think about it. The old man had committed suicide in order for Pearlie to live.
"Grandpa,"
he continued to plead,
"can you hear me?"
The old man's words came in short gasps as the blood now flowed from his mouth when he tried to talk.
"Get gold for family."
"To hell with the gold," Pearlie said. "I want to see if I can get you somewhere for help." Grandpa gripped Pearlie's shirt sleeve tightly and repeated,
"Get gold for family. Promise."
"I promise," Pearlie said. "Now don't try to talk." He felt the hand gripping his sleeve relax and knew the old man was almost gone.
"Not rock, rooster,"
were the dying words that came from the old man's lips in his final exhale, words that had no meaning for Pearlie. He could only guess that his grandfather was past conscious thought when he spoke them. Pearlie unsaddled the horses and unloaded his pack horse, thinking he might as well let them rest, since he would be there a while. He picked a site near the top of the ridge for his grandfather's grave, under the trees, then went to work digging it. When he had finished, he laid the old man's body into it as carefully as he could manage. When the grave was filled and covered with rocks and branches, Pearlie tried to think of something he could say. He was never much with solemn words, so he just thought about what a shame it was that the old man had been so happy about the prospect of going home to meet his family, only to end up in a lonely grave over a played-out mining claim. When Pearlie returned to the edge of the creek, he stood staring at the man who had killed his grandfather. After a long moment, he grabbed the body by the boots and dragged it over to the gully where he had found Lem Wooten's body before. With a silent apology to Lem, he rolled Ingram's body over the edge of the gully. He was inclined to saddle up and head for Texas and to hell with the gold. Too many had been killed because of it. But he had promised his grandfather that he would dig it up and take it to his family as Grandpa's atonement for leaving his wife and child. "Ah, hell," Pearlie cursed, stripping down and entering the water with a shovel. All the rest of that day was spent in knee-deep water, digging the dirt out from under the big rock his grandfather had walked up to when they first came to the site. At the end of the day, Pearlie had to conclude that there was no gold under the rock. Tired and hungry, he was done with the treasure hunt. He remembered the old man saying there was one more thing he needed to know in order to find the treasure, so whatever it was, he'd never know. Pearlie built a fire and cooked some of the smoked venison he was packing. He would camp there overnight, then decide what to do with the extra horses he was now in possession of. His initial feeling was that he didn't want the horses that had belonged to his grandfather's killer. He was inclined to unsaddle them and let them go free. By morning, however, Pearlie had decided the horses probably held no ill feelings toward his grandfather. So, with horses to sell, as well as extra guns and saddles, he decided to return to Deadwood, where there was a better chance to sell them. He was in no particular hurry to return to Texas now, since he wouldn't be taking Grandpa home. With that settled in his mind, he drained the last cup of coffee out of the pot and stood there gazing at the ill-fated mining claim below him. "It looks peaceful enough now," he thought, "but it claimed a hell of a lot of lives, and no gold to show for it." "That's the way things work out sometimes," Pearlie said with a sigh, and walked down to the edge of the creek to rinse out his coffee pot. Then he stood staring at the big rock that had become a symbol for wishful thinking while he finished the coffee in his cup. When that was done, he rinsed it too, and decided to take one last look at his grandfather's grave. He walked up the slope and stopped before the grave, thinking about the funny little man buried there. Out of the corner of his eye, he noticed a jagged rock about the size of a large gravestone only a few yards away. He hadn't taken notice of it before. "If I didn't care if anybody found your grave," he said to his grandpa, "I could have buried you over there and used it for a headstone." Taking another look at the rock, it occurred to him that it kind of looked like a rooster from that angle. His grandpa's last words struck him then. "Not rock. Rooster." "Well, I'll be damned," he muttered when he could speak again. This concludes The Legend of Pearlie Gates by William W. Johnstone with J. A. Johnstone. Narrated by Danny Campbell. Copyright 2018 by J. A. Johnstone. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.